Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today because we are going to hoot about owls. And we've got a person who's a hoot when it comes to talking about owls. Carla Bloom is the executive director of the International Owl Center. It's based in Houston, Minnesota. And you may have, she's got some great things to talk about. There's an International Festival of Owls. And it's scheduled for March 4th through the 6th in Houston, Minnesota. We'll talk with her about that and why it's in Houston, Minnesota, which isn't a huge place, but it's an important place when it comes to owls. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions, comments, or experiences. You can phone. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. And you can post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show, so type that in, and you can go there. And, hey, if you've got a photo of an owl, post that up on our Facebook page as well. We'd love to have that. And let's see if we can find Carla. Carla, hi. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks for having us on. I always like to talk about owls.
Well, and here you are, a big shot with the International Owl Center.
Well, I guess you could say that.
Well, probably big shot is the appropriate term is executive director.
There you go.
Of the International Owl Center. And I think it's a cool story is how that came to be. And share that with us.
Yeah, we never intended to do anything like this. It just sort of happened. What happened was the city of Houston had the Root River Bike Trail expanding and coming into town. And they had nothing that would function as a trailhead for the trail. And they said, well, we spent 10 years trying to get this bike trail to Houston. We need to have a reason for people to want to come. So they said, we're going to have a nature center as our trailhead because we had no nature center anywhere in the county or anywhere on the trail. And we're in extreme southeast Minnesota where we have the beautiful Bluffland area, part of the Driftless area. And it's 3% of the state's area, but we have over 40% of the state's rare species. So it's nature
cool.
Is kind of our thing here.
Yeah.
And my interest, I was involved from the get-go with the planning. My interest was raptors. So I thought, let's get a permanently injured education bird and start doing programming before we even build the center so that we can get going, build awareness, and help build this center. And I wasn't fussy. I just got what was available, which happened to be Alice the Great Horned Owl, who came from the Raptor Education Group in Antigo, Wisconsin. She fell out of her nest when she was 3 weeks old. Her nest was in the city of Antigo. And she permanently messed up her left wing so she would never be able to fly. Well, she was young enough that when she was being cared for by the rehabilitator that she imprinted on humans. So she thinks she's one of us, even though she's got all of the natural owl instincts. So when she was a year and a half, I got her for doing educational programs here, which was very interesting for me because she wanted human attention, which is not something I expected, and she did all of her vocalizations towards me, and we basically had this close relationship because I both lived with her and worked with her because we didn't have a facility built yet. And shortly after the facility opened, Alice was already the star of the show, so I thought, let's do a celebration of her hatch day. We know she hatched in early March, and the Nature Center is about tourism as well as environmental education, so this would bring people to town when really nothing else is going on. And we called it an owl festival, and we had some other live owls come in. We did a bunch of kids' things, and mind you, Houston has a population of 979 people. And we're not real close to any big metropolitan areas. And we had 300 people come the first year, so we thought, hey, that's pretty good. We added a few things, and within a couple of years, we had people flying to Houston from Alabama and California and New York, and we thought, what?
Wow.
Why are you flying to Houston, Minnesota, the beginning of March? And that's when reality struck, that nobody else was doing anything like this. So we thought, well, hey, we've got something. Let's build on this. And we added a World Owl Hall of Fame to present awards to people and owls who were doing fantastic things to make the world a better place for owls. And although we would collect the nominations, we didn't do the judging. We had owl experts from around the world do the judging. So they were, you know, judged by their peers. These are very high-level awards. So the fun thing is, then when these people win their awards, most of them come to Houston during the festival to receive their awards and speak. So now we have all the top owl people in the world come to Houston to speak. So the festival has grown, and typically the last few years we've had about 1,800 people come to the festival over the course of the weekend. And after several years of that, we kind of realized, you know, there isn't an owl education center anywhere in North America. There's many raptor centers, but owls are normally not front and center. And, you know, there's a lot of people that don't want to come to Minnesota in March to learn about owls. So as a spinoff of that, we eventually, and we looked at, of course, the success of the National Eagle Center in Wabasha. And we thought, well, if they can do it with eagles, let's do it with owls.
Why not?
So last year, in conjunction with our festival, we opened the International Owl Center in Houston. And we don't have our dream facility. We're operating out of a historic storefront in Houston, which gets us going. It's not ideal for us, but it absolutely is great for getting us started. And that's kind of how we got to where we are today. So it's Alice's fault.
It's all Alice. And I think we have a photo of Alice. And Breanne's going to put that up on our Facebook page so people can see a very stately bird, I might add.
Yes, and she has just kind of a regal aura. She's always had this, like she knows she's important. And when she works at the Owl Center, our birds don't live there. They just work there. They commute to the storefront during the day, sit on perches, because what do owls do during the day? Sit there and do nothing.
Yep.
So it's not abnormal for them. But to be tethered there at night is not something they'd be comfortable with. So they all come home to a site out in the country every night, and then they are in their aviaries and can fly around. But when she's there with the other birds, when we got our Eurasian eagle owl, Alice was on the perch next to her, and they have a curtain between, so they have a visual barrier between the two of them. And Uhu, our Eurasian eagle owl, that's the German word for Eurasian eagle owl, that's how she got her name, kind of gets all the attention because she's one of the largest owls in the world. And Alice would sit there with just this dirty look on her face, like, why am I not getting all the attention? And finally we moved her up above Uhu to a perch on the mezzanine, and then she looked happy again, resplendent in her regality, sitting up there with everybody looking up to her now.
Oh, that's...
The birds really do have personalities that, and very much have facial expressions, and it really comes out when you're working with more than one bird.
Well, that's a wonderful story, Carla, and I love how that all unfolded. It's great, and I tell you what, Houston, Minnesota sounds to me like the perfect place for all of that. Carla Bloom is the executive director of the International Owl Center based in Houston, Minnesota, talking with her about owls, and we'll get into the event, the Festival of Owls, coming up March 4th through the 6th in Houston, Minnesota, because there is a lot going on there. And we have a number of, every single one of my lines is filled, of my phone lines. So let's go to People like owls. So let's go to the phone. Mike in Castle Rock up first here. Mike, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I've banded a lot of barn owls in Ohio and in Michigan and Indiana, but I don't see them here this far west. Is that the end of the range, you suppose? Do you get them up where you are?
Barn owls.
Yes, barn owls are not doing as well as they used to be doing. So they used to be more common in Wisconsin as well as in Minnesota, but they now, I believe, in both states are considered accidental. That being said, they do pop up every now and then, but you generally don't hear about it because what happens these days with so many people being birders and so many people loving owls and so many people doing photography, when these uncommon birds are seen and many people become aware of them, they kind of get mobbed. So very often when they're found, it's kept very, very quiet. So that there are more barn owls showing up in Wisconsin, but they certainly don't have a stronghold in Wisconsin at all, nor in Minnesota. They would just be considered accidental.
Yeah, and you're not going to see them flying around very much. They tend to be a little bit loners, don't they, Carla?
They tend to be what? Oh, loners?
Yeah.
I can't necessarily say. I don't have that much personal experience with barn owls, but I do know when it comes to breeding, they're not as territorial as the species that we have around here typically. A great horned is going to say, this is my territory, everybody else stay out.
Yeah.
So you have fewer territories, whereas barn owls will breed in higher densities if the food and the prey support it. So they're used for managing rodents in vineyards in California, in farmland in Israel, and in other places, because you can put up a lot of nest boxes, and they will nest very densely. You couldn't get great barn owls to nest in that kind of density, or eastern screech owls, or barred owls, but barn owls will nest in high densities, unlike some of the other species.
Again, thanks, Mike, so much for calling. I've got a wonderful wood carving on my mantle of a barn owl carved by a pretty noted carver, Bob Googie, and it's just I see a barn owl, or at least a wooden replica of a barn owl, every day, right on my mantle.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Pete, who's north of Holman, up next. Hi, Pete. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Great show. I have an interest in birds because I'm outside a lot. I've got property with two streams that come together, wooded stream ravines. I've got an owl that's been here, I think, quite a few years. It's a large cream-colored with some brown in it, and I've identified, I'm always looking for it. But if I walk my dogs late in the evening, this has happened half a dozen times, the owl will buzz us. Literally, you don't see the owl, you'll hear it, the feathers when it spreads its wings. It comes so close over our heads, everybody hits the dirt. My dogs, me, and I'm curious about that behavior. Is that a territorial thing? Is it something that large owls commonly do?
Or does it happen this time of year?
Or do I just have a cranky owl?
Is it this time of year that happens?
That happens in the fall and winter, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, and so the first question is, what size dogs do you have?
Very large.
Okay, all right.
German Shepherd,
the reason I ask that, if they're very small dogs, so many people are getting these 5-pound and less dogs, and they need to understand that for wildlife, when they go outside, those are potential prey items for many different species, including great horned owls. So if you had the little dog that you were taking out for a walk buzzing it like that, it's probably thinking, oh, there might be some supper there. And then they say, oh, look, it's attached to a human being. Let's pull off here. Now, if it's a large dog, it's probably more an aggressive thing, as in, you're a threat to my young, or I don't want you in my territory, you're near a cache of my food. So it would be much more defensive if you've got large dogs and they're buzzing the dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think that's probably the case. And, you know, fall, well, especially winter, I mean, that's sort of the breeding time for a lot of owls, especially great horned owls. It's January, isn't it?
So great horned owls, some of them are on eggs already.
Yeah, so there you go. Pete, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with Carla Bloom, the executive director of the International Owl Center based in Houston, Minnesota. It's wonderful to have her with us, and I hope you'll join in with your owl questions or maybe your owl experiences at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. I'm Larry Mealer. Breanne Chesso, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, visiting with Carla Bloom about owls and the International Festival of Owls. I've got the schedule in front of me, Carla, and it does look like a hoot, so to speak.
It is.
There is a lot going on for family. I think it's a kind of a family event, but obviously anybody can come. But it looks like there's kids' activities and nest box building and pellet dissection and, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so the fun thing is you can bring a whole family, and if some of the parents have very serious interest in owls and, the kids, of course, would have a lower-level interest, there's stuff for everybody. So whether you're a scientist or you're a little kid, there's things to do that will interest you at the festival.
Including an owl face pancake breakfast on Saturday the 5th. But, I mean, so much going on with programs and kids' activities. And, You know, people are, somebody's probably saying, well, where in the blazes is Houston, Minnesota?
It's in Minnesota.
We know that much.
Yeah, it's not that far away. It's about half an hour west of La Crosse, Wisconsin.
So you just go across the bridge at somewhere around La Crosse, and there you go.
Yep. Just take 16 on over, and you wind up in Houston. And people always say, well, where is the festival in Houston? Well, it's all over Houston. The bulk of the programming is at Houston High School, and we use the whole high school. But we also have our birds at the International Owl Center, which is at the main, on the main drag in Houston. The Owl Face Pancake Breakfast is at the Lutheran Church. We do a special event for our members at the community center. All of the businesses in town will have their storefronts decorated with owl art from our International Owl Coloring Contest. And there's a parade of owls sculpture tour that's kind of a permanent tour that's located throughout town with 10 public owl sculptures. So when you come into Houston, it's kind of owl immersion experience.
Even a raffle and a drawing.
Yeah, of course.
You've got to have a raffle.
If you're going to
have an owl festival, you need a raffle. Well, we have lots of callers online. As I said, every line continues to be full. So let's turn to Ray and Rhinelander. Thanks for waiting, Ray. What's on your mind?
Hi. Up here in Siberia with the temperature, we're surviving as usual in Rhinelander. But otherwise, I want to make a couple comments, and then I have a question about an owl in that area. First of all, that is one of the most beautiful areas of Minnesota. That southeast corner of that driftless area there that is connected with the Mississippi Basin, from Lanesboro to the Yucatan Valley and down through Houston, is one of the most astronomical, beautiful places I've ever been. I'm really glad they've upgraded their bike trails and done a lot. Now there's the Owl Center, and it's just a fantastic place. So if anybody's interested in going for the beauty and everything else there, it's just fantastic. There is a little owl that I lived there temporarily once years ago. There was a little owl that I saw down in the bottomlands between the highlands of the woodlands and the bottomlands, and it wasn't very big. And is that a predominant species? Do you know what it is? And what other owls are predominantly in that area? And thanks, Carla, for everything you've done. And I'll take the comments off the phone and on the radio.
All right. Thanks very much for your comments, Ray. And Carla, what about that little owl? I've got an idea.
There's two possibilities.
Yep.
There are two small species that we have around here. The most common one is the eastern screech owl, or at least the most commonly seen, and that would be the small guy that has ear tufts. And they come in two colors. They can be reddish or they can be grayish. Occasionally you'll get something that's a little more brownish, but typically they're red or gray, but they have ear tufts. And very often they're called barn owls because they will show up in buildings in the winter. They have issues when it gets really cold, like in January, and they'll show up in people's garages or in their barns. So some people will call them barn owls. But if they're small and have ear tufts, that's an eastern screech owl. The other one that's a possibility would be the northern saw-whet owl, which is a little bit smaller, and it's the smallest species that we have in the eastern U.S., and it does not have ear tufts. And they're just little plump guys, and what's really fun about them is they don't have a whole lot of natural fear of humans. So if you see one, especially in the winter, you often can walk up to within 6 feet of it, and it just kind of opens an eye like, what? I was sleeping. Leave me alone. So they're just so cute. People just love them, and they see them, and they always say, oh, it's a baby owl. It's a full-grown adult. If an owl is fully feathered, it's a full-grown adult, no matter what size it is. So those would be the two possibilities. The saw-whet owls are most common here in the winter, although they're probably here in the summer more than we know. And that's the thing with owls. There's a lot that we don't know about owls.
And those saw-whets, there's lots of good photography of photos of saw-whets because people can get really close.
Right. And then the fun thing, too, is in the winter when they pick a spot that they roost, they very often will roost in the exact same spot every single day. So if somebody sees it and you tell me, hey, Carla, I saw this saw-whet owl over in this tree in this spot, and then I go over there the next day, it's probably going to be sitting in the same spot. Or if it's not, I'll probably see a bunch of little frozen poopsicles on the branches underneath its perch because it sits there all the time. So if I go back the next day, I'll probably see it.
There you go. Well, let's go somewhere else. Let's go to Steve in Sun Prairie, see what's on Steve's mind. Hi, thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. last year we had a pair of great horned owls. We live right in town in Sun Prairie, but they nested right in our backyard. And as the young ones grew up, they hung around our backyard a lot. And I got a lot of pictures, and I get up in the morning to go to work early, and I'd see them sitting. One of them would be sitting in my small bird bath. It was just about as big as the bird bath. And I thought, well, it's kind of, I never thought an owl would take a bath, but I suppose it would. So I went and got a 4-foot kiddie pool, those plastic kiddie pools, and the hard plastic ones.
Yeah.
And I cut it down so it was about, you know, 3 inches deep, and I filled that up, and they were in there every morning, sometimes in the evening. Sometimes during the day they'd come down, but they used it quite a bit. So if anyone has owls around, because they won't fit in the bird bath. I watched them try to take a bath in a regular-sized bird bath, and it's quite comical.
I bet that was hilarious.
Yeah, and they hung around our yard a lot. They roosted right in a tree right 20 feet from our back window during the day that two or three of them would be sitting. There were three babies. And then they stayed there till they got almost full-grown, and then they kind of took off, and I believe the adults are back again. We can hear them hooing, you know, but it was quite interesting.
Steve, yeah, you are a good guy. Isn't he a good guy, Carla?
Yeah.
I think, what a great idea.
Yeah, it worked good. So if anyone has it, might want to try it.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's a wonderful story.
Yeah, and very lucky to experience owls in your backyard, because so many people love owls, but you can't just say, oh, I want to go out and see an owl today.
No.
That's a very difficult thing to do, and even especially finding nests is very difficult around here where we have such dense vegetation. If you go out west where there's fewer trees, then it's far easier to find nests than around Minnesota and Wisconsin where we have a lot of trees. So you're very lucky to be able to witness that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then they stayed around, in part, I'll bet, because Steve provided some great habitat, quote-unquote, in the form of that pool.
Yeah, a lot of people will say, oh, they don't drink any water, but they do sometimes drink water, and they do like to bathe, and it is so funny to watch them take a bath, too.
All right. Steve, thanks again. Appreciate it. Amanda in Potosi, it's on to you now. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My question is, I have 16 acres of wooded land with the stream going through. How can I make it more owl-friendly to help lower the mice population?
Oh.
It depends upon what species of owls that you have there. If you have screech owls, and they like to be in partially wooded areas, partially open areas, but near a stream is very nice for them. You can put up nest boxes to encourage them. And it sounds like it's a pretty wooded anyway. Another thing we always tell people is if you want to attract owls, mow less lawn. Because if you have a large mowed area, that's not supporting a lot of critters that the owls are going to eat. But it sounds like you already have mice that you want them to get rid of.
Oh, yeah.
With the species that we have up around here in Minnesota and Wisconsin, they're probably not going to totally get rid of your rodent population. You know, if you were in a place where we could have barn owls and attract them, they can make a really serious dent in the rodent population and help farmers and whatnot. But around here, it's a little trickier because our species don't nest in such dense populations as barn owls do. But a real key thing is not to use poisons to control the rodents, and most people don't realize this. Everybody knows that there's some owls dying from eating poisoned rodents, but they started doing some studies to find out how many wild owls out there have sublethal levels of rodenticides in their bodies, and they're finding 60 to 80% of wild owls have one or more kinds of rodent poison in their body, which will stay in their body for more than a year.
Wow.
Yeah, so something everybody can do to help owls is use traps instead of poison to control rodents, because almost all of us are going to have to deal with rodents at some point in time in our lives. But I think if most people knew that the percentage of owls that have rodenticides in their bodies, I think almost everybody would opt to use traps instead of rodenticides. It's a pretty terrifying number.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a trap guy myself, and I have never used rodenticides, and
yeah.
And I hadn't thought about it in relationship to owls, but now I'm glad I have it.
Yeah, and it's not just owls. It's the hawks will eat it also, and so do pets. Most vets have dealt with pets that have eaten. They'll eat it directly. And then, of course, there's 10,000 calls a year to poison control centers for children who have consumed rodent poison. So it's really not good stuff.
But do some checking around there, Amanda, in your area in Potosi. Actually, the local DNR office is probably going to be able to tell you right away the owls that are in your area, and you can, you know, an owl nest box or two or three might be.
Oh, and another key thing would be leave dead trees standing.
Yes, I was.
The more dead trees you can leave, the better, because that's going to provide nesting places for your owls.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Amanda, for calling. Appreciate it. Greg in Norwalk, your turn. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Carla and Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have two owl experiences I've been curious about. One is related to the swooping down of the owl, but both were while I was bow hunting. And the very small owl, he saw me. Of course, I was sitting still with light out, and he would sit in a perch about 10 or 15 feet in front of me, and then he would fly right at me and swoop, you know, to the right or left at the last minute. And I've always wondered if he was kind of playing with me or just being curious. And then the second... Go ahead.
Oh, I think we lost Greg. I know what he was going to say. He was hunting, and he was up in his tree and heard a loud screech, which would probably raise the hair on the back of your neck, especially if it was kind of darkish. And he wondered if it could have been the eastern screech owl, and I think that could be the case.
Okay, well, let's go with the first one first. Very often when people are bow hunting, they also have face camo on.
Yeah.
And the owls will come very close because the hunter is sitting perfectly still, and the owl really doesn't see anything other than their eyeballs moving. And they get really curious about the eyeballs moving because they just see the eyeballs and they don't really notice anything else because they're so perfectly camouflaged. So they do get really close to people in full camo with face paint who aren't moving very much.
That is very interesting.
I've heard that from many bow hunters. When they're sitting perfectly still and wearing face camo, the owls will come really close to them to look at their eyes because all they're seeing is the eyes moving. And then as far as the screech, you would think that an owl with the name of Screech Owl would actually screech.
It doesn't.
They don't. So whenever somebody says, oh, I heard this really loud screeching owl, or it was really annoying, it wasn't a screech owl, because they don't screech. Why they were named that is kind of beyond me. The call I would expect that probably was something from a barred owl. Barred owls make all kinds of weird calls. They'll do some caterwauling. But one of their calls that is almost impossible to record because they'll usually just do it once, and if you're not already recording before they start it, you're not going to be able to record it, is an alarm call, and I call it their woman being murdered call. And it sounds like, and I'm going to hold the phone away from my mouth because it's loud.
Oh, you're good.
But the first is just this high-pitched, loud, increasing shriek that just would make about anybody jump out of their skin.
And then the who cooks for you? Who cooks
for you? Their main call is the and they will also do the caterwauling where they open their mouth also, and they'll get into the
And the young can sound pretty, if they're hungry.
Yes, young owls will do begging calls repeatedly, and especially great horned owls, they just grate on your nerves. It's this short shrieking that I can't imitate with my voice very well, kind of a, except for it's just higher pitched, scratchier, and just grates on your nerves because it's loud, and they'll do it every 15 seconds. And usually in late summer when the parents are saying, okay, you're on your own, I'm not feeding you anymore, the kids will do it just incessantly, like, hey, I'm over here, feed me. And the parents are like, no, I'm ignoring you. And they just go on and on and on and drive people nuts. The barred owl does a similar thing, but it doesn't sound quite as grating on your nerves. It sounds a little bit more like the steam escaping from a tea kettle. It's a little more whistly like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It very, very You are very good. And there is actually at the festival, at least there's a kids hooting contest, isn't there? Yeah.
We do a kids owl calling contest. We've tried to do with adults, but most adults are too chicken to stand up in front of a crowd and imitate owl calls. So we do it with kids because kids don't care and they don't even pay attention that we have some of the top world owl experts judging their calls either. They just get up there and they just do it. And some of the kids are fantastic.
So some of them practice ahead.
Yes, some of them don't, but you can tell who has, because some of those kids are perfect, right on the button. We've had long-eared owls that were perfect, great gray owls that were perfect, barred owls that were right on the button. Some of these kids are really good. We usually have around 30 to 40 kids that participate each year.
That would be, well, that's part of the festival, so that on Saturday, I think, so that would be a lot of fun, March 5th, to see that. I just go back to that for just a second, because things are going on Saturday from 8 in the morning until 8 at night, or later.
Yeah, till about 10.
Till about 10. So, and then Sunday from 8:30 till 3 or 4.
Till about 3.
Till about 3. And then prior to that, Friday, you've got an event from 6 o'clock until...
The owl prowls finish around 10 or 11.
Yeah, so you go out and look for owls.
Well, we call them. So we put an expert owl caller on each of three different buses and send them in different places. And it's important that each bus goes to different places and stops at different locations, because when you're imitating an owl call to get them to call back, you're basically irritating them and making them think there's a stranger in their territory. They know who their neighbors are. They know what they sound like, and they're hearing something that doesn't sound right, that doesn't sound like one of their neighbors, so they get agitated and call back. So you need to be careful about not doing it repeatedly in the same area. So all of our buses go to different locations.
Brian in Dorchester has a comment for us. Hi, Brian. Thanks for calling.
All right, Dorchester. Yeah, recently witnessed a disturbing sight. I had a dead horn owl hanging from my barbed wire fence.
Oh, yes.
How did that happen? Or wondering what was going on there, Carla?
This happens, and this is one of the other things we tell people that they can do to help owls is remove unused barbed wire fences, because there's a lot of barbed wire out there that's just never going to be used again. And owls do get caught up and hung up in it. And it's typically great horned owls. They're probably chasing a rabbit or some other prey, and they're flying with their wings out. And the rabbit goes under the fence, and the owl winds up impaled on the barbs. And, of course, what do? They struggle to get out, usually flip themselves around, wind up ripping the muscle off their bones. And sometimes people will find them, but even if they're found by people, usually, well, almost always, they're so severely injured they have to be euthanized. Because even if the injury is pretty minor, they hit the leading edge of the wing, which is just a thin, it's mostly just skin, it's a patagium, and it winds up with cutting and scarring in it, and then they can never fully open their wings again. So it's really nasty for owls to get hung up in there. It doesn't happen with huge frequency, but I've personally have dealt with several great horned owls hung up in barbed wire. They all had to be euthanized. So something that we encourage people to do is if you have barbed wire on your property that's never going to be used again, to please take it down, because it does happen, and it's really nasty. And even if they hang there and die, great horned owls don't die fast. They may hang there for a week or two before they die. It's long lingering.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, Brian, I'm glad you called, because that's a good message for a lot of people to have. If they have, if you have barbed wire you're not using, take it down.
And having rolled barbed wire, I know it's not fun and not easy. There's a technique to it, but if you have a lot, they actually make an attachment for the PTO shaft of a tractor for winding the barbed wire. So it can be, large sums can be done in a reasonable way.
Brian, thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Gary in Boscobel up. Let's go there. Gary, hi. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome, Larry. I'd heard you and your guest mention about nesting boxes for owls, and I have a oversized wood duck box in my cottonwood tree in my yard that the barred owls nest in every year. But one of the cautions that I have is with the overabundance, especially of raccoons, a nesting box in a tree is like a neon sign to a predating raccoon, and I have to fight every year to try to keep the owls safe, and I've gotten to the point where I have to put electric fence around the tree to keep the raccoons from getting up there and eating the youngsters or the eggs. And I had owls there for 25 years, and finally after about 4 or 5 years of predation, I've lost that family of owls that's been there for generations, and got my fingers crossed that some new ones will set up a territory there. But then there's always that fear of the raccoons getting in there and destroying them. So every raccoon that I get a chance to eliminate around my place there, it's a goner.
There you go.
Yeah, you're right. Raccoons are a significant nest predator and a competitor for the cavity also for raising young. So some of the cavities that we have in our yard, some years will have raccoons nesting in them directly. But very creative idea to use the barbed wire fence.
Or
the electrical, not the barbed wire. Yes, not the good kind. Fence. And as long, you just have to know that it has to be grounded. We had an issue with our breeding enclosure for a captive pair of great horned owls that are non-releasable as part of the vocal study we're working on. And we had an issue the first year the female laid eggs with cats and raccoons climbing on the outside of the aviary. So what we wound up doing was the same thing. We had to put an electric fence around the base of the aviary, and that worked. It kept the cats and the raccoons from climbing on the aviary.
Well, that's really wonderful. And thanks again for that call. I really appreciate it. And, Carlo, let's just go back once more to the International Festival. And, you know, people are going to have a chance to see the International Owl Center and all of the rest of it. But at the same time, there's owl merchandise. There's live owl programs for children. There's a family and adult-only owl prowls, and there are some for families as well. It's just a great weekend. If you go for a weekend, is there a place to stay nearby?
There's one hotel in Houston, and I'm not sure if they're full up yet. If somebody's interested in staying there, I would recommend booking immediately. And if they're full, there's a hotel in Rushford, which is 15 minutes to the west of us. Caledonia also has lodging, or if you want to stay farther away, you can go to Winona or La Crosse. But we do have people that wind up staying around the area because Houston is so small. We can't provide enough lodging for everyone.
Well, Carla, I tell you what, it's maybe a small community, but you've done some big things when it comes to owls. And
it's with the help of the whole entire community. We have about 100 volunteers that help with the festival. The Garden Club helps. The Boy Scouts help. The Lutheran Church helps. Another Garden Club helps out. It's just a huge amount of community involvement to make it work.
Well, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Again, it's March 4th through the 6th in Houston, Minnesota. Our guest today, Carla Bloom, Executive Director of the International Owl Center. And again, it's based in Houston, Minnesota. And I believe we may have a link up on our Facebook page, or may be able to link it somewhere to the Owl Center so that you can go there. If you type in International Owl Center, it's gonna pop up for sure. Again, thank you so much, Carla, for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
All right. Well, we talked about owls, so we got up in the air. Let's get in the water next and take a look at sturgeon. We're going to be celebrating sturgeon in Wisconsin, and that's in an event coming up. It's not going to compete with the owl festival, but in fact, it's coming up really quick because it runs February 12th through the 14th, the Sturgeon Spectacular. Kathleen Klein and Craig Molitor coming up next to talk about it here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.